Punjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Vanadari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banadari Jasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tera Banachari Ajamuna Tera Banachari Ajaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banadari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Ajamuna Tera Banachari Ajamuna Tera Banachari Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Radha Shama Sunda Radha Shama Sundara Radhe Jaya Giri Govardhan Jaya Giri Govardhan Jaya Giri Govardhan Jaya Giri Govardhan Jai Nityalila Pravista Astatarasata Sri Siman, His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prem Sakaho Sri Krishna Taitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan Ki Jai. Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi. All glory to your assembled devotees. All glory to your assembled devotees. All glory to your assembled devotees. All glory to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glory to Sri Sita Devi. All glory to Sri Janamamata. All glory to Manu Pandit. Karna Purji, can you give me your password over here? Oh, I thought you had it and nobody else did. Okay. Only Damodar has it. Okay. Well. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And there's no copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita here either. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I got. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. All righty. There's 10 more devotees in the classroom than I expected this morning with the yard sale going on, so thank you all very much. So we're reading today from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 23, text number 73. Stirodanta Shamashilo Gambiro Jitamam Sama Vadanyo Dharmika Sura Karuno Manyana Krit Stirodanta Shamashilo Gambiro Jitamam Samam Vandanyo Dharmika Sura Karuno Manyamana Krit. Please chant. Stira, steady. Danta, having controlled senses. Shamashila, forgiving. Gambira, grave. Drittiman, calm, never bereft of intelligence. Sama, equal. Vadanya, magnanimous. Dharmika, religious. Sura, chivalrous. Karuna, kind. Manyamanakrit, respectful to the respectable. Lord Krishna is steady. His senses are controlled, and he is forgiving, grave, and calm. He is also equal to all. Moreover, he is magnanimous, religious, chivalrous, and kind. He is always respectful to the respectful people. Om Ajnana Timadandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilita Mena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam karoti vachalam pangumlam jayate girim yakripa tamaham bande shri gurum dinitarino shri guru paramananda premananda palabada bhajana namananda seva minna jaya Mom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pacharine Nivisesha Sunivari Paskichari Sitarne Vancha Kapatudu Bistra Kripa Sindhu Bahebacha Patita Nam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namona Maha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nittananda Sri Advaita Sugadadhar Shivasidi Gaudha Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Please narrate this divine and miraculous history of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for it will cleanse the polluted consciousness of these material worlds. By hearing it, mankind can become freed from the repeated cycle of birth and death, which is plagued with horrible sins, and can awaken love in the hearts of all people. One should proclaim Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sublime and auspicious deeds, for by hearing them, the burning anguish existing amongst the inhabitants of the material world will be pacified, and pure Krishna Prema will awaken within their hearts. These two very nice prayers by Marari Gupta concerning the glorification of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should be embraced by us wholeheartedly, enthusiastically. Why? Well, because Marari Gupta says here that by narrating, and narrating is a two-part process, someone speaks, someone hears. So by narrating this divine and miraculous history, because we know the divineness, but many of the activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described in these literatures are very miraculous. And what will be the benefit of hearing this? That the polluted consciousness of the material worlds will be cleansed. This is what we're striving for when we take to the process of devotional service, is having our consciousness cleansed. And not only ourselves, but the entire material world benefits from this, because that sound vibration goes out and goes everywhere. By hearing it, people can become freed from birth and death. So simply by hearing the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, we can become freed from birth and death, because it will motivate us to change our habits, to engage in different types of activities. And what is the ultimate benefit then? Is that it just awakens love of God within our hearts. Therefore, Marari Gupta continues, one should proclaim these auspicious and sublime deeds because they extinguish the burning fire that exists in the heart of all living entities. So from any angle you look at this, we can appreciate the fact that the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are very, very wonderful. They're very beneficial. So this verse we're looking at here today, I can go back to it. There we go. It continues in the descriptions being given to Sanatana Goswami by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of the 64 qualities of Krishna. Why 64? Krishna has so many qualities, unlimited qualities. But the Acharyas have highlighted 64 particular qualities. It's the last one here is interesting, manyamanakrit, respectful to those who, respectful to respectable people. This is part of the instructions we find from Haridas Thakur, is the four ways that we reciprocate, engage in relationships. We take instruction, we take guidance, we take refuge in those who are seniors, we share our mind equally amongst those who are our peers, our contemporaries, we give our guidance, our encouragement to those who are juniors, and some devotees we respect from a distance. So we respectful to the respectable people. This is one of Krishna's qualities. And who better than Krishna knows who is suitable for respect? Of course, knowing that the living entity exists within the heart, next to the super soul, that the personality of Godhead is there in every living entity. I was just listening to Prabhupada. He was speaking on these verses from the 16th chapter of the Bhagavatam in Honolulu in 73, 74. and he was mentioning about that the particular chapter is dealing with Dharma, who's approaching Mother Bhumi and asking what her difficulties are. And, you know, he's saying that, are you disturbed by the difficulties that are there in this world? You disturbed by these persons that are causing so much trouble? And at any rate, so the nature of who is respectable, Prabhupada mentions there that every living entity has Krishna in their heart, even the animals. Therefore, a devotee respects all living beings, doesn't cause harm to anyone. This is part of that respect that is mentioned there, amanyamanakrit, this appreciation of Krishna's presence, and therefore seeing all living entities as respectable. So these are the qualities that are being given here of Krishna. It's interesting to note two verses earlier. Was it two or was it three? I've lost it now. At any rate, these 64 qualities that are given, we can easily find these same qualities in the personality of devotees, particularly in the personality of pure devotees, but in the personality of so many devotees as well. You know, the very idea that only Krishna can have these good qualities isn't a part of our understanding. Because the living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, that means the living entity has these qualities. Now, maybe not in full, we understand that according to the living entity's position, according to their particular type of body, consciousness, they're going to have certain degrees of Krishna's qualities. But here we see that the qualities being given, we can find them in the qualities of a devotee. Controlled senses, being steady in their execution of devotional service, being forgiving. This is a very important quality. Devotees don't hold a grudge. Although sometimes it may take us a little while to get past something. You know, we may identify with something a bit, but in due course of time, that can be overcome. Grave, calm. I like this Sanskrit here. Dhritaman, calm, never being bereft of intelligence. Intelligence means to be able to perceive what's reality, what's the difference, what needs to be done, what's that, was discussing, circle of concern, circle of influence. Intelligence means to never be bereft of seeing how can I deal with something, you know, or not deal with it according to the circumstance. So these are the qualities. And these qualities we see present in all of the personalities we're going to attempt to discuss here today in this class. It's interesting when you have a day where there's multiple personalities being honored to try and cover any one of them. I think Madhu Pandit's the only one you could double up with anyone because there's not a lot of biographical information. Sita Devi, the consort of Ram, and then Janava Mata. I mean, you could go on for two or three days speaking about the qualities of Janava Mata. Matter of fact, many people have. But we'll start with a few notes here about Sita, the wife of Lord Ramchandra. And so many of us know all of these pastimes, so we'll just pick a few here. But I'd like to start with this wonderful prayer to her. O daughter of Janaka, the blessed soul of refugees. O consort of Sri Raghuram, bedecked with shining gem-like ornaments, I pray, protect me always. You are the wind that destroys the clouds of demons like the hundred-headed Ravana. You are the indweller in the heart of all devotees, and your feet shine with the luster of gems set in the crown of Indra. So we might think this a little unusual. Sita is so much more than Indra, her feet being compared to the crowns, to the jewels in his crown. But Indra is the king of the demigods. Unimaginable wealth at his disposal. So we can imagine the crown that he has, the jewels that are in it, are quite incredible. And they're compared the effulgence to the feet of Sita Devi. So we know how Sita Devi came to be. I wanted to instead take a little bit of time and... Where is my... here we go. I had this all through a different connection, but I don't have a password here. So it's going to take me just 1 second, please. There we go. So Sita is growing up very nicely in the court of Janaka. And one day, the great sage Parashuram came to visit. Now, of course, Parashuram, one has to be very cautious around Parashuram. He's a little fiery sometimes. So, of course, he has his great bow. And he carries his bow with him. And it mentions that when he came to the doorstep of the royal hall where the king was sitting, he left his bow at the door. And then he went inside. When my son, Namananda, was young, he would always go to the temple with two things. His red plastic boots, rubber boots, whether it was summer, winter, it didn't matter, and his bows and arrows. He would carry this with him everywhere. So I would always tell him, just as you leave your shoes at the door to the temple, you leave your bows and arrows. You don't take them into the temple. So we see the history behind that, is that this is what Parashuram did. He understood, oh, I'm going, no need for the bow and arrow here. This is in the palace of the king. So he set the bow there and went in. Now, while he's in the royal hall, conversing, whatever, with Janak Maharaj, Sita sees the bow. Now, she's a little girl, so she decides to play with it. She takes it and puts it between her legs like a little wooden horsey and runs it around the courtyard. We can just imagine this sight. Sita Devi with Parashuram's bow between her legs running around with it like it's a horse. Now, the thing is that only those with great, great strength, and what to speak of boldness, could lift or even handle this great bow of Parashuram. So Parashuram finished whatever business he had in the royal hall. He came out and his bow's not there. Who has taken my bow? So he's about to become very angry. So he knows not any one person can easily lift this bow. This is my bow. So how could it be missing? And he looks around curiously, and there he sees Sita. He's got this bow riding it like a horse. And so the king was standing there with him, and so the both of them were very, very astonished. I mean, completely astonished. So Parashuram turned to Janak, and he said, "My dear king, only a great person, a very strong personality, physically and otherwise, can marry your daughter. You should arrange for the Swayambara of her in due course of time, and let the most suitable person in the three worlds marry her." So, of course, we know the whole story. The challenge is sent out. The man who can conquer this bow will wed my daughter. And so, of course, we know Ram did such like that. So this is how, from a very young age, she was immediately understood to be such an amazing personality. And we know the history that Ram is banished, the whole political intrigue there. We won't go into all of that. But so when it becomes clear to Ram that he has to go to the forest, he immediately takes off all of his royal robes, dresses in sack-like clothing, and prepares to go to the woods. So he now has to go to Sita and present to her that there's not going to be a wedding. Instead, I'm going to the forest. So Sita sees him approaching, and Sita says, "You, my dear Lord, you seem to be very worried. This is a joyous time. We're about to be married. What is the matter? Has something inappropriate happened?" And she goes forward with her sari and wipes the sweat off of his forehead because he's very nervous with what he's about to have to tell her. So he says, "My dear Janaki, do not be aggrieved at what I'm going to tell you. I have to leave this capital for a distant place. You should see me off without any tears. I will go to the forest and live there for 14 years, and then I will return. You should remain here with no anger and no sorrow at my departure. Be very calm." We just read that word in the verse. "Our parents are very old. You look after them both. Be good and courteous to Bharat also, who will rule in my place. Please give me your blessings that I can now leave." Sita was very sad. Now, we might think she's sad because the wedding's being canceled, her husband's being banished, but her next words are very important. "My Lord, I can't stay for a moment in any place without you. In your absence, this Ayodhya will be like a jungle to me. The forest wherein you will stay, that will be my kingdom. My life runs as your shadow. It is not becoming of you to think of leaving me behind." So then Ram began to explain to, no, I don't think you understand. I'm about to live in the forest here. He says, "You don't understand jungle life. It's not a cozy royal garden. Cruel wild animals live there. Evil rakshasas infest the forest. You'll hear ferocious voices as you try to quietly and peacefully sleep at night. You will have to live on roots and wild fruits. A tender lady like you cannot tolerate these hazards. You will pass every single day with impending fear and danger. After all, 14 years is not a short period of time." So Sita listens to this, but then she says, "Whether it is a jungle or whether it is a town, it is my duty to be with you. I do not care for the comforts of this palace. I am not afraid of the difficulties that we will encounter in the forest if I am by your side. You are a lion of men. Can't you protect me if I'm there with you?" So she poses this question back at him. "You're thinking to leave me here where I'll be protected in the coziness and comforts of the palace. What, you can't protect me if I'm with you?" Well, it's a nice little prod, one might say. So understanding her point, Rama agrees. He says, "All right, Sita, if you were with me, then any jungle will be like a heaven. Let it be as you desire. We shall prepare to go now." So we all know the whole rest of the story. But I thought this particular mood that Sita had in her companionship with Raman, her devotion to Raman, her embracing whatever difficulties he has to undergo were very, very appropriate. Now, also here, today we're speaking Janava. There we go. Janava Devi. Janava Devi, of course, as we know, is the wife of Lord Nityananda, the co-wife, her sister also. But her father's name was Suryadas. And Suryadas came in a very, very significant family line. He was the third son of Kamsari. And Kamsari Mishra, his father, had six sons. So there were older sons, Damodar and Jagannath, and then younger sons, Gauridas Pandit, Krishnadas Sharkela, and Ashringa Chaitanya. So we know these names. Anybody familiar even with a passing reading of the Chaitanya Charitamrita knows these names. It's a very prominent family. And they were residing in a place called Shalagram, which is not very far from Navadvip. And Suryadas had a very important position as a commander in the government and received a very good salary for this. And so a very comfortable lifestyle. He was a very magnanimous devotee. And he was known to be completely devoted to Lord Chaitanya. Now, he had these two twin daughters, and Vasudha and Janaka, Janava. And so seeing that it was time for marriage, he began to think, I need to arrange for my daughter's marriage. Any father who has daughters in this age, even in our modern time when things aren't so arranged like this, still begins to think like this. So he had a dream while he was sleeping, and in a very happy mood, he saw that he was presenting both of his daughters to Lord Nityananda. And so he was very, very happy about this. And then the next day, one of the local Brahmins came and said to him, I understand your daughters are to be married, and I think it would be appropriate that they marry Nityananda. So Surya Das came back to his family after meeting with this Brahmin, very happy about this news, and presented the information to them. The family was a little less than enthusiastic. Nityananda? The Avadhut Nityananda? He has no income. He has no job. We don't know his family lineage. No one knows where he's come from, who he's associated. How can you marry? You know, no, this can't be done. This is just not possible. So in this way, there was some opposition. But through the course of various dreams and various arrangements with the local Brahmins, the family was convinced, and eventually the marriage took place very nicely. The Shastras give a very, very incredible description of the marriage of Nityananda. Now, the let me just catch up to myself here. Auspiciously performed. Yes, it mentions auspiciously performed. So after the marriage, Satchimata requested that Nityananda should come and stay there in Navadvip so she could meet the two girls, give them her blessings, and in this way, he then eventually traveled to the house of Advaitacharya in Shantipur. These are all very close, within a short distance of each other, not impossible to travel. And Sita Thakurani was just floating in an ocean of bliss when she met the brides. Very, very nice. Now, Janamabanta herself, she had no children. But Vasudha gave birth to two children, Virabhadra and Ganga, who were respectively the incarnation of Shirdakshai Vishnu and the Ganges River. Now, Ganga, Nityananda's daughter, was married to Madhvacharya, who was understood to be an incarnation of King Shantanu. So we know this connection between Shantanu and Ganga. If you've read the Mahabharata, you know this story very well. So in this way, the life goes on very nicely. In due course of time, Janava Mata makes her travels to Vrindavan, spends some time there at Radhakund. Actually, she spent 3 days there. Sometimes we go to Vrindavan and we think, oh, I can't go for anything less than a month. You know, some of us have that mentality. If I'm going to Vrindavan, it's at least a month, maybe 6 weeks. Janava, she was there for 3 days. So we shouldn't feel too bad if we have to cut our trip a little shorter than usual. Bhaktivinoda has written one nice prayer glorifying Janava Mata. O Janava Devi, be merciful to this servant today. Deliver me from my pain and give me a place in the boat of your lotus feet so that I can cross over the ocean of birth and death. You are Nityananda's energy. You are devotion to Krishna. And you are my guru. Please give this servant the desire tree of your lotus feet. How numerous are the fallen souls that you have saved. So this fallen beggar also seeks a place at your feet. Now this is a very suitable prayer for us as well. We can see that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is such an elevated personality. He's comparing himself to a beggar seeking shelter at the boat of the lotus feet of Janava, which is quite appropriate because she is the head at a certain point. She becomes the head of the entire Vaishnava community. She's respected and honored. Sometime after Mahaprabhu's disappearance, after Inanda Prabhu's disappearance, sometimes after all these personalities have gone, different philosophies have come into play. Different apasampradayas have become to manifest. So we see that Narottam Das Thakur, the second generation of devotees, we can say, along with Shamananda Pandit and Srinivasacharya, they've been sent from Vrindavan by Jiva Goswami at the request of Janava to their original places of birth, West Bengal, East Bengal, and Orissa. Because Janava, in modern terms we can say, she realizes that all the Goswamis, this is a golden era of Vrindavan. The Goswamis are producing all their literatures, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhakti Rasamrita, Sindhu, Brihat Bhagavat, all this is coming out now. And Janava Mata is requesting the Goswamis, you have all these things there in Vrindavan, please be merciful and send some of that to Bengal. We also want to read these books, study these books, embrace these books. So arrangements are made for the three Shisha disciples, the students of Jiva Goswami, namely Narottam, Srinivas, and Shamananda, to take all these books with them and go back to their original places of study. I mean, original places of birth. And so they get back there. We know, of course, the great story with the theft of the books by the king, and then Srinivas staying, and then each of the other two boys going under their young men, Narottam and Duki Krishna, Shamananda, going on to their own places. So we see then that Narottam, in due course of time, wants to organize this big festival. It will be the first Gaur Purnima since Mahaprabhu's departure. Now, one of the purposes of this is to establish what the actual doctrine of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, and to differentiate that true doctrine from all of the different teachings that are arising, the apasampradayas, as we would say. So in order to oversee this, to, we could say, chair this symposium, Janava Mata is invited. And at the same time, Narottam's cousin, Santosh, who has taken the place rightfully meant for Narottam of ruling the kingdom, Narottam has renounced everything and gone away. So in that situation, we see that Santosh has established certain deities, and he wants to have these deities installed, build a grand temple. So all of this is part of this festival in Kettari. But the focus in Janava's involvement is the fact that she's there and that she is going to more or less rule, we could say, by Shastra, what is the actual teaching of Mahaprabhu? What is the actual purpose of this? It's understood that she oversees all of this. This is just one aspect of the festival. There was the installation of the deities on Mahaprabhu's appearance day. And then there was the kirtans that took place there, which were absolutely quite amazing. Narottam had been working on some new style of kirtan, Garanahati. This means moving slow like an elephant. The description of Garanahati kirtan is like an elephant walking through honey. Now, if you have honey and you put your fingers in it and try to move them quickly, it doesn't happen because it's thick. You can move, but it's a slow process. So we can imagine an elephant slowly moving through an ocean of honey. There are oceans of honey. And so this was the style of kirtan that Narottam had been working on. So the day for the presentation of this kirtan, Janava Mata was seated there. Narottam came in with his kirtaniers. Worship was given to all the different instruments, sandalwood paste and flower petals and garlands, to the mridanga, to the cartels, to each of the kirtaniers. And then, looking at Janavamata, Narottam requested her permission, and it's mentioned that she imbibed in him the potency of doing this kirtan. So, very amazing kirtan. The kirtan itself was so incredible that the entire Panchatattva, who had long departed, all manifested. Now, many times we see that, you know, this one or that one will have a dream or someone will manifest before them and only that person can see. It's explained that actually all the devotees could see the Panchatattva there. And Janavamata was seeing that there is her Lord Nityananda, and she's so very, very happy. So this was one day. The kirtan went on late, late, late into the night. The next morning, the kirtan was, after the morning bath and morning sadhana, then Janavamata went to the kitchen and began to arrange the cooking for the first offering to the newly installed deities. This is all described in great detail in a number of places, Bhakti Ratnakar primarily. Janava was an expert cook, and she had many, many fires going in the kitchen. This was a vast kitchen, and she's overseeing everything. You cut the vegetables this way, mix the spices with that. No, the dough should be like this. Yes, now you put the, you know, just directing everyone and personally cooking herself. The feast was finally finished. The offering was made to the deities, and then the prasadam was distributed. The prasadam, cooked by the hand of Janavamata and offered to the Lord. I mean, who wouldn't be excited to have that prasadam? I don't care if it's even just a morsel of rice. It's going to be filled with nectar. So the arrangements were made by Narottam, Srinivas, and Shamananda for the distribution of this prasadam. And I'll just interject here real quick. Mukhi had asked me to mention about the correction of who had done the crown floral decorations, and these ladies have just come into the room. You, yes? No? Yeah? Yeah? at any rate, so the arrangement was made for prasadam distribution. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of devotees were there, all lined up very nicely, very, very first class. All the servers have got the different preparations, and it's all being overseen. Yes, take glove germans down this, or more rice over here. Take the sabji down this, you know, like that. And then everyone's finished, and Narottam goes to Janavamata. Ma, please, you be seated, and we will serve you now. And Janavamata says, no, no. I am your mother. I will serve you, prasadam. You please sit. No, no. How can we let this? No, no. Please, you sit down. I will serve you. So Janavamata then, by her own hand, serves Narottam and the rest of the servers. After they are all satisfied, then she sits and honors a little bit of prasadam herself. So this is the amazing example for her to set for everyone, you know. During her time of traveling, she traveled extensively. And the personalities that would be saved by her ran the gamut from great brahmanas to agnostics to outright atheists to demons to thieves and rogues. One night she was camped in one place in her travels, and some of the local thieves saw that there's this lady and everyone's coming and offering obeisance to her. She must be very wealthy. She's got so many servants. So tomorrow we will, tonight we will plunder their camp and steal all their wealth. So they had this idea. So everybody ready? Okay, we're going to get all of our weapons. Good, good, good. All right. So we'll begin. And so the nighttime came and they began running to the camp. They're going to plunder the camp and running. And running. And they ran all night, and when the sun came up, they were still in the place they started. So, wow, how is this possible? What has happened here? The junior dacoits, we could say, they were very upset with the leader. What, have you just led us in circles or something? What's going on here? So at any rate, this happened two or three times, and finally they could understand this was all the potency of Janavamata. So amazing activities that Janavamata was engaged in. And anyway, there are so many discussions, as I mentioned, that could be had about Janavamata. We go on for days and days and days, but we are required to also speak about Madhu Pandit. Madhu Pandit is one of those personalities we find no information on in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Rather, Bhakti Ratnakar gives quite a bit of information on him, or at least what information is there. Oh, there's a wonderful prayer from the Bhakti Ratnakar. Oh, Srinivas, what more can I say? The Lord reveals himself to his pure devotee, who then preaches the Lord's glories to the world. Who can describe the incomprehensible activities by which the Lord is subservient to the love of his devotees? Thus did Sri Rajendrana Kumar reveal himself to Paramananda Bhattacharya and Madhu Pandit, who were the abode of many wonderful qualities. So Madhu Pandit, it's understood that Krishna's great-grandson, Brajanav, carved different deities, and three particular deities. Govindaji is said to resemble the face of Krishna, and Madan Mohan, from the navel down to the lotus feet, is said to resemble that portion of Krishna, and then Gopinath is said from the navel up to the neck to resemble that portion of Krishna. So these three deities together. Now, of course, we know history, and over the course of time, these deities became lost and hidden and so on. And in Bamsibat, Paramananda Bhattacharya found this deity and entrusted the care of the deity to Madhu Pandit. So Madhu Pandit became the caretaker of Gopinath in this way. It's an interesting story that when Janavamata was visiting Vrindavan, she stopped and visited this temple. And she was attending the aarti in the evening at Gopinath. And suddenly, Gopinath jumped off the altar. Now, we can just imagine if we're having darshan and Shamsundar. No, I think we can't imagine. It's beyond our ability to understand. The activities of the deity should not be restricted in our thinking. Oh, that's not possible. It's just stone. This Prabhupada says this shows we have a hellish mentality. At any rate, the deity jumped off the altar when Janavamata was there taking darshan and took Janavamata onto the altar and then closed the curtains. So when the pujaris opened the curtains, Janavamata was gone and Gopinath was back on the altar. One of the personalities given by our Kavi Karnapur as the incarnation during Krishna Lila for Janavamata is Ananga Manjari. So therefore, a deity of Ananga Manjari was placed next to the deity of Gopinath in respect of this particular incident there. When Jiva Goswami, we see how all these personalities are connected. When Jiva Goswami was sending off the three boys, Narottam, Shyamananda, and Srinivas, from Vrindavan back to their original places, Madhu Pandit was there, and he gave a garland of flowers from Gopinath to these devotees to be placed on the cart there with the books and all like that. And it shouldn't be overlooked that, how shall we say this, that Madhu Pandit was quite the fashionista. We can say that very boldly. Madhu Pandit had a very interesting hat. And that hat was made entirely of tulsi beads, embroidered together. Not embroidered on cloth, but just woven together, just tulsi beads. That was his hat. Not to be outdone, he similarly had one jacket. And I'm not talking a short little vest. I'm talking a jacket below the waist length, with sleeves, completely made of tulsi beads. Now, someone might say, oh, well, that's a nice story. You can see those. They're there. I've had the darshan of them. They're in the Gopinath Temple in Jaipur. For many, many, many decades, they were in one glass case set into the wall on the main hallway where the sun came on them for 50% of the day. Anybody that knows anything about keeping artifacts knows that you keep them out of the light and the sun and temperature change and like that if you want them to last for some time. So seeing this situation, Indradyumna Swami arranged for donations to have this set of clothes, this hat and jacket, relocated to a little alcove shaded area with a temperature controlled box and a nice painting on the wall behind it of Madhu Pandit, and then a nice plaque describing this. So now if you go to the Gopinath Temple in Jaipur, you'll see that these are no longer in this unsuitable place. They're very nicely preserved in this nice glass case in this protected area. While those articles are being moved, one or two beads broke off of the jacket, and these were given to Indradyumna Swami. And I have begged on many occasions, but not been given one of those beads. So they're solidly situated on his altar. Now, for those that think, oh, well, this is just, you know, somebody made this and put it. Actually, it's in the historical records of the temple there. The originating details of this jacket and hat. So Madhu Pandit was not only a very great renunciate, not only the recipient of the mercy of Gopinath, but also a pretty snappy dresser. I have not heard of or seen anyone since then that has made a hat or jacket out of tulsi beads. So there we go. At any rate, just some small snippets in our limited time for class today on these three amazing personalities. Why do we have our calendar marked with the appearance and disappearance of these personalities? So that we can interrupt our daily routine and spend some time studying these personalities, spend some time conversing about these personalities, spend some time meditating upon the good qualities of these personalities, just as we're meditating on this chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita on the good qualities of Krishna, although that sounds a little funny to say, but nonetheless, the 64 qualities given. We can appreciate these qualities being present in these different personalities, and this is why we honor these individuals on their particular days all throughout the year. The purpose is, though, that not just for 45 minutes in the morning, an hour, whatever it is, but that we take that opportunity of that day and dive into remembering the acharyas. What is it Kavi Karnapur says? One who wants to be completely satisfied should always remember and discuss the dear associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who are following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. So very important for us. So we'll finish there today. Yes. Anyone has any comments, questions, corrections, chastisement? All the above is acceptable.
Thank you, Prabhu. This quality of Gambira, meaning grave, do you happen to know the origin of the Gambira, how it got its name?
Say again?
Gambira.
Gambira.
Where Lord Chaitanya exhibited his pastimes. How did that place get that name, meaning grave?
How did that place of Lord Chaitanya's get that name? Well, if we look at what the word Gambira means, and we look at the mood that was present during Mahaprabhu's residence in that place, it's very easy to understand. Very grave, very focused, very deep. The pastimes of Mahaprabhu while he was staying in the Gambira are very deep. very, very serious. A grave, as the word would be. And so, therefore, we can easily understand how that place was given that name, because that was the mood of Mahaprabhu at the time. Pundarik, can you add anything to that?
I was just thinking that we translate words and like that, and it doesn't mean that's the only meaning Gambir is. I was wondering whether it means like also secretive, like hidden sort of thing.
Hidden.
But, I mean, a word, we translate, Srila Prabhupada translated sometimes words in different ways.
Yes.
According to the context.
Mm-hmm.
So words, even in English, have different meanings. Like you look at the dictionary, it has a list of meanings of the word.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, huh? Yeah, the Atmarama verse.
Yeah. Well, when one of the recent classes I gave, there was a word I wanted to look up, and I went to the Sanskrit English dictionary, and it gave that word, but gave a variety of definitions of that word according to what sentence structure it was used in. So you're absolutely correct. But Gambira, we do understand, means all of these things we discussed. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right. Yes, Soma.
Just a comment, since we have some time, about Sita when she was in the forest.
Mm.
There's a fruit that's actually named after her called Sitafal.
Sitafal.
And it's something that Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman would give to her, and it said that it was her favorite fruit. And it's it doesn't store well, so it's best if eaten, you know, right picked from the tree.
Mm.
And there's another mention of Sitafal in Krishna's pastimes when Krishna went to visit the Pandavas, and Draupadi received Krishna, and she wanted to give Krishna Sitafal. So she just had a fresh Sitafal, and it's best eaten fresh, so she gave him the Sitafal and a knife to cut it open. And so when Krishna went to cut the Sitafal, he actually cut his finger and started bleeding, and Draupadi was so overwhelmed that she started to rip pieces of her sari off and bandage Krishna's finger. And Krishna was very pleased with that, and he said, oh, since you've given me this piece of your sari, at some point I will give you unlimited saris.
Mm, interesting. Yeah. I had not heard that before, thank you. Yeah, Sitafal in American botany is known as the apple custard, or custard apple. Yeah, because any of you that have had Sitafal, when you open it, it's like that. It's very much like custard, and that's why, as you say, it's best eaten fresh. If you try to save it for some days, it doesn't work out well. All right, we'll finish there. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Sita Devi, all glories to Janava Mata, all glories to Madhu Pandit. Hare Krishna.